It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Alongside former Badger and Packer Gary Ellerson, here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
It is the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour without Homer, because I'm Ben Brust filling in today. And I'm very excited to hang out with my guy, GE, Gary Ellerson. Because me and GE, we go way back. What's going on, buddy? Alrighty, GE still getting settled in.
Sure.
Check, check, check indeed. You got me, Gary? All right, C-Cat, I'll let you effort with Gary Ellerson just having a flawless day here at Summerfest in the Gruber Law Office's Sport Zone in the Pella Remote Studio. I guess I'm going to have to do the thing that Homer does, and I'm going to have to ask myself the question. Hey, Homer slash Ben, does The Miz pitch today? Yes, The Miz pitches tonight. Against the Chicago Cubs. The wait is over.
Sure.
Check, check indeed, Gary. 800-990-3776 is the Carbless Talk and Text line. C-Cat, if you could take Gary down, that would be great so I can get something going here. Because I'll stick with the Milwaukee Brewers three-game series against the Chicago Cubs. And Pat Murphy, if you missed it, had a back procedure, a two-and-a-half-hour back procedure. And within 24 hours, just like that, Pat Murphy is managing the game tonight. So although he had back surgery, he will not be in the dugout. It sounds like he will be remotely managing, whatever that means. He is a warrior. At 67 years old, back surgery, 24 hours. I don't know how many pain meds he's been on, but hopefully it helps with his decision-making, which is usually pretty good. I trust Murph. I think we all trust Murph. He's the two-time NL Manager of the Year, and this team has won three straight NL Central championships. And what a great opportunity, because the team behind the Brewers in the NL Central standings was the Cardinals. After the Cubs just swept the Mets, they have jumped into second place. So, not that there's not a lot of games left in the season. We have hit the All-Star break. But I think anytime you are 20 games above 500 and you have a chance to go even higher above 500 and you could do so against Greg Council, Greg Craig, you do so. Gary Ellerson, do I have you for the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour with Ben Brust? Sounds like I do
no.
not. Oh, there's no. my guy, GE.
No, can you hear me?
I got you, GE.
All right, well, let's go.
Did you hear my intro?
No.
I just showered you with praise. I mean, showered you. We go way back. We go way back, Gary, you and I.
Yeah.
I am so excited to do the show with you because the last time I remember doing... we won't say where, but I did a show with you before I started working at Good Karma Brands. And I was foolish. You were wise beyond your years. You know why? Because I was like, within the next 5 years, Wisconsin football is going to win a national championship. And you just said, you know what? You're just a dumb kid with fan brain. And you know what I've learned? Not to be the dumb kid with fan brain. So I want to teach you for that very important life lesson that I learned from you early in my career.
Okay, well, now what are you?
Just a dumb brain. Just a dumb brain, Gary. How's that?
All right, well, what's your intro?
Well, I mean... The intro is, it's the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour, and you know what question to ask Homer when you were on the show, correct?
Yeah, Homer, what are we doing today?
Wrong question. Is The Miz pitching tonight? I need you to ask me, is The Miz pitching tonight?
Or is the roof open or closed?
I don't have a toupee, and thank God I don't need one to show if the roof is open or closed, Gary. I got enough hair. Apparently, I'm receding a little bit on the sides, but I don't know if it is or isn't. I'm going to the game. I'm busting out of Summerfest and heading on over to American Family Field to watch The Miz, who is pitching tonight.
Yeah, he's been awesome, hasn't he?
I mean, you've been around. I mean, this is something that's unprecedented even from all of Major League Baseball. Like, when you see him 2 weeks ago do a Maddox, he faces the minimum. He gives up one hit. He doesn't hit ball three once. He has 15 strikeouts in less than 100 pitches. You're witnessing somebody that at any moment that you watch him pitch, you could be witnessing history. Are you to the point where you are making sure you do not miss when Jacob Mizrowski pitches?
Well, you have to. He's appointment visually that you got to go see this guy pitch every single time. He's incredible. I don't know really how to explain it. That the Brewers could get such a guy without trading for him or falls in their lap. They actually drafted this dude here.
The 63rd overall pick has turned into somebody who was a prospect that could throw hard, that's turned into somebody that doesn't just throw hard. He commands where he throws it hard, and he's worked on secondary pitches to become one of the best pitchers in baseball and the favorite to win the NL Cy Young as it stands today. I mean, it's incredible. I mean, I know there's been Cy Young winners for the Brewers, but what he is capable of doing is different than anybody that's ever pitched here. Fair to say?
I said capable. Well, I would say this. The last time we saw at least myself, someone this dominant of a pitcher, we had to go get him. CC Sabathia.
And he's a Hall of Famer. And he was pitching on like 2-3 days rest and was pitching unbelievably on short rest on a year where he was not going to be a Brewer and he could have risked getting hurt and not getting paid the next year. And that's why he went in the Wall of Honor. So I think that's fair. That was only a half a season, and it was electric with Ryan Braun and all of them. But you have Miz under control for 5 more years. I mean, that if he stays healthy, that's why I say he is capable of showing how he can do something that's never been done in MLB history and for Brewers history.
But that's the part of baseball I hate. The five. Most certainly he's out playing track. The Brewers have to do right by him and figure out how to give him more money.
Well, the problem is right now, even if you tried to do a contract like you've done for Cooper Pratt, Jackson Churio, Luis Lara, he's just too expensive even right now. Like he's not going to sign anything because what he could be worth, even if he does get injured and gets out of the team control, he could be one of the highest paid players. And then obviously you're looking at, you know, the CBA and the MLB Players Association arguing about what's going to happen. Is there going to be a lockout, this and that? So it's a weird time in baseball that I'm just in the camp right now that while Jacob Mizrowski is pitching in 2026, you enjoy the ride because You have to.
You do, and I am, but you're also looking at the future. If you are, I'm putting my former player hat on here.
Put it on.
And I got to figure out if some way the Brewers can sweeten the pot. And I don't know how much he's making this year. Is it about $800,000?
Somewhere
and at some point, I know I'm coming back, Miz. Can you, and it won't be what I'm worth, but can you pay me a little bit more? And I don't know how that works, man. Because I hate baseball that way.
Yeah, I don't know if he can, like, because of the team control and arbitration and all that. So it gets a little interesting where they have to offer probably a long-term deal. But I don't know if he would take it because he's probably going to want to bet on himself. It doesn't mean that he's going to be going anywhere for a long time. But also, I think you just got to ride it out with how much control you have, unfair or fair, to how much he's getting paid. He's got to use his likeness locally to try and get endorsements. And if the baseball brand continues to grow and he can become a Cy Young pitcher, can he be a national face and star of the league and grow his revenues for himself that way? Because I think he's going to be pretty much locked into team control, and that's probably how they're going to operate with him. Because if you were to try and get him locked up for even longer, which you don't want to do because you already have him for a pretty long time, and there's a lot of unknowns when it comes to pitching and injuries.
Yeah, well, he should be the national face of Major League Baseball. No doubt about it. I mean, that should be, but that's on Major League Baseball, their brand. Obviously, with the Brewers, he's the face of the Brewers, but Major League Baseball is a whole different deal.
So, Gary, I do want to get a lot of thoughts from you on Giannis and everything that's happened in his era. Because Homer, and I'm going to play you this clip from Jen Gabe and Chewy. Homer was on this morning. I'm on for Homer tonight. That's how it's going. So, C-Cat, let's give Gary a little taste of how Homer is looking at Jacob Mizorowski in comparison to Giannis.
The Miz is a bigger freak than Giannis.
I mean,
it's not even close.
Like,
no one in the history of baseball has ever done what the Miz is doing. Many, many have done what Giannis did.
What do you think of that?
The Miz is a bigger freak in his career, right? Than Rodgers or Brett Favre.
Wow. So this is where we got to get really, really pointed at the conversation. We're talking about, like, we just had Tom Brady on a podcast talk about how Aaron Rodgers, everyone talks about him being the greatest thrower of the football. Tom Brady, a 7-time Super Bowl champion, echoed that sentiment as he is the greatest to ever, throw the football and place the football with accuracy. You're saying somebody who's in, I don't even know if he's been in the majors for a full year to this point, even counting last year, that he's already surpassed them in what he's able to do throwing a baseball.
What I'm saying is, at this point in his career, let's say, where was Brett Favre or Rodgers in their second year?
Nowhere near where he is from a dominance and doing it at the highest level of all pitchers in Major League Baseball. That would be like saying Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers in their second year were MVPs, correct?
Correct. And
so through 2 years, I would say yes. But I don't know. I think it's hard for me to say that he's freakier than them when you have the full body of work in comparison. I need to see more before I'm saying he's doing freakier things. Sorry, there was a selfie being taken. I put two thumbs up. Is that why you're laughing?
Yeah. I thought it was to me.
No, it wasn't to you. No thumbs up for you, Gary. Just taking a picture.
Okay, fine. I think you have a point. But right now, he's the best pitcher
in
Major League Baseball right now?
He is the best pitcher in Major League Baseball right now, undoubtedly. He's the NL Cy Young favorite.
That's Christopher
Sanchez, who was unbelievable the last month, just gave up 5 runs to the Washington Nationals. That doesn't mean he's a bad pitcher. It's just, again, Jacob Mizorowski gave up one run in 8 weeks, and then his last outing gave up two. He's just ridiculous. And we get to see him in a big leverage spot tonight against Craig Counsell's Cubs.
And we just hope that no injuries derail him. Because right now, he's on a fast track to be the best pitcher in Major League Baseball for the next 5 years.
The only thing that can stop him, I believe, is what you just said, and that's injuries. And that's out of our control, so that's why I say enjoy the ride while you can. So that's Miz. The Miz is pitching tonight. Gary Ellerson, it's the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. I need the GE breakdown because there has been a weird 2 days post-NBA draft on the fan sentiment towards Giannis. How much grace does he get for winning a championship versus what we're finding out about how he's controlled the way he's gone out of this team and how he's limited them to a trade with the Miami Heat, and the only other offer was the Celtics. But reportedly, there was four other teams with strong offers that he was not interested in, so that put the Bucks in an interesting spot. I get the thoughts from Gary Ellerson, live from Summerfest for the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. Next. It is the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. I am not Homer. It's impossible to be like Homer. I'm Ben Brust, hanging with you at Summerfest in the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone in the Pella Remote Studio. And I'm with Gary Ellerson, who's going to tell us about Dean, the Dancing Machine.
Dean Murray, the Jury Center, Brookfield, Mequon, Greenfield, new location in, did I say Mequon already? But Burlington. So they have four locations for you to go get all your jury needs. My good friends over at the Jury Center will give you the most money for your old gold jury. And guys, I'm just talking about service. When you walk in, you're not just a number. They take care of their customers who walk in. If you're looking for to change your battery out of your watch, done in less than 5 minutes. Go check my good friends out today at the Jury Center and ask for Dean Murray.
That is what you should do per Gary Ellerson. And Gary, I do want to hit on the Giannis Antetokounmpo era with you. How much grace does Giannis Antetokounmpo deserve after he brought a championship to the city of Milwaukee for the first time in 50 years? Now, as the Journal Sentinel article written by Jim Warzowski came out, and a report today by Ramona Shelburne that there were four strong offers outside of the Miami Heat and Boston Celtics that the Giannis Antetokounmpo camp did not want to go to, so the Bucks could not look at those deals. How does Gary Ellerson look at the Giannis situation?
I think he got to back all the way up for me, because I think there was a fumble by a lot of people. And I don't know if Giannis had anything to do with it. First mistake. You should have re-signed P.J. Tucker. Run it back. What was that about? Second mistake for me. And I know everybody was on board with it. Should never got rid of Budenholzer. I don't know who was responsible for that. And then you go get some coach that nobody knew. And I don't know if Giannis was in on the Budenholzer firing. But then the hiring of your next coach wasn't very good. And then the Giannis's brothers being on the team. Should never happen. They should be in the NBA. Then they screwed up the Dame for Jordan. Should have never happened. So I don't know who's responsible for all that. Is that Giannis or the front office? Those things I just mentioned.
So I think of all those four things, I think each of them has there's a little bit of mixture, right? For one of them, maybe it's 75% Giannis, 25% ownership and general manager, right? For one of them, it's probably more on general management and less on Giannis. But the fact of the matter is, I think as you bring up all these things, after Budenholzer was fired, it seems as if there was a discourse in what the identity of the Milwaukee Bucks was, right? Like they like when they traded Drew Holiday and they got rid of Bud, they didn't have any identity. And obviously Adrian Griffin had a great record, but to fire somebody who's 30-13 in his first 43 games as a head coach is crazy. And then for Doc Rivers to come in and say, I wouldn't wish this upon my own worst enemy. You're looking at a championship team in 2021, and then you fast forward and you're like, what the hell happened? How is there already this much dysfunction after we move on from Coach Budenholzer? So I agree, and I think Giannis agrees. Now, the interesting part is some people do link the firing of Budenholzer to Giannis. I'm not going to confirm nor deny that. I just know that some people link that to Giannis, and if say that's the case, in the Journal Sentinel article, you also have Giannis talking about how he's drawing up plays from the Budenholzer era. So it's like he wanted it both ways, but also if he didn't want Budenholzer there, it's like, well, you can't have it both ways. He's not there anymore, and you moved on, and this is what you got. And so I think all parties are at fault. Ownership, John Horst, and Giannis. They seemingly never could get on the same page from what we're finding out post-trade. And that's how we are entering a new era of Bucks basketball, which God only knows when they're going to be really competitive again.
Now, doesn't that sound a lot like Rodgers?
Yeah, Giannis Rodgers is something I've seen pop up.
Yeah, well, Matt, in this case, I see Matt LaFleur looking at his coaching sheet, and he's flipping it over. He's trying to find a play that Rodgers running, and then Jordan Love looks over at him and says, "Yeah, no, that's the play that Mike McCarthy had for Randall Cobb."
That ain't gonna work.
But Aaron Rodgers didn't like Mike McCarthy's offense because it was too stale,
which is also screaming irony here that they're together again in Pittsburgh, but that's for another day.
we'll see them in the preseason.
That's true. That is true. In Pittsburgh. Yeah. Real quick side note, it is kind of sad post-Aaron that he never had a chance to play at Lambeau. I would have loved to have seen what the reception and vibe would have been like for him, for every, you know, for all.
Yeah, but let me say this, Ben. I'm happy for Giannis. Because I don't trust the Bucks ownership to make this work. I'm happy that Giannis gets to go to Miami in the sun and has a chance to win another championship. I don't think he could have got it done here in Milwaukee. I think Bucks ownership is more to blame than Giannis.
So here's what I find interesting. I have been operating under the assumption, because Giannis said it himself, that his goal, he said it on the analysis show with his brother, who's part of your list of things that the Bucks did wrong, that his goal is to win a second championship for his legacy, and he feel like he'd be letting himself down if he did not do that. So I'm taking him at his word for this. But then when I see the report today from Ramona Shelburne that there were four other teams with strong offers for Giannis, and there was only two on the table that were discussed publicly about the Celtics and the Heat, and he chooses really to go to the Heat because that's where he wanted to go, and superstars, as you know, have the power in the NBA to dictate where they want to go. In 2026-27, he's not winning a championship next year with the Miami Heat. Now, who's to say that they, with Pat Riley, they don't do things over the course of the year and then into the next season to put themselves in the way of being a better competitive team to win a championship? But what if one of those four offers was from a team that I need to know, Gary, who those other four teams are, because if his goal is to win a second championship And one of those teams, I don't know, I'm not saying this, but OKC has a lot of assets, right? They have a lot of picks. They have players that were young. What if they were in the mix, right? I don't know that. And if, say, they were, and Giannis didn't want to go there, then I don't know what to believe anymore. Because he didn't want to be a Milwaukee Buck, and then he wanted to go to Miami because he wants to win a second championship. So what if one of those four other teams was somewhere where he actually could have a better chance to win a second championship? Because I don't know how that is the case right now with the Heat.
Well, that's all if come maybe. And Ramona should have put it out there. Because it doesn't hurt her to list the other teams. I don't know why she didn't do that. But we know that Giannis wants to go play.
My guess real quick, Gary, is there was a Ramona article during the trade deadline, just past it, and it had quotes from Jimmy Haslam. So I'm guessing this might be also from the Bucks telling her, hey, we want it to be known that Giannis did not make it easy for us to move him, and we just had to do what he wanted, which maybe set us in a spot where we could have had a better offer, but because he acted the way he did and wanted to go to Miami, he didn't leave. And I think there's just trying to be like a Giannis, we're mad at you, everything you've done towards the end of your Bucks career. They're like trying to make it seem like he's the bad guy now.
Well, yeah, of course I think they are. But we don't know what those teams are out there. I think what the Bucks need to do, because they got the 10th and the 13th pick, they got to make sure they hit on both of those picks.
Oh yeah, and they
forget
drafted
about everything else.
They drafted Barrys and Nate Amett, and they're young. We don't know. Like, again, you're never going to know if they won the trade that happened until probably 3 years from now when you look at those guys that they drafted and you see the young players that they got from the Heat. And if they're building something, now I don't think everyone that they have is going to be part of the team and part of the future that they're building, right? Tyler Hero, a local product, is on an expiring deal. Do they trade him before the season? Do they trade him at the deadline to try and get more picks and try and start building up more young talent to try and get as many bites at the apple of trying to hit on a young player who can blossom into something? Because that's how they're going to change this franchise, is going to be through a rebuild. It's going to be near impossible for them to do a reload. That's just not how it's going to work with how it's constructed, especially after they waived and stretched Dame's contract that they're on the hook for the next couple of years.
Well, I mean, Tyler Hero is going to be worth something.
For sure.
Everybody needs a shooter. He can stretch the floor for some teams that have a lot of bigs, i.e. go back to Miami. But I think he's not going to be happy here in a rebuild. Now, I know he's from here, played at Whitnow, Hell's Corners. But after you been in Miami, South Beach, coming back to Milwaukee to a losing team just doesn't do it for me.
Yeah, and I think what's best for him and the Bucks is that he's an asset that they can flip to build their future.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what's going to happen with him. Would have been a cool story, but it's not. It doesn't make sense for either party. So
it doesn't.
I don't know when, but I think when you have a guard who was an all-star, who was a sixth man of the year, he's been injured a lot. He hasn't played in a lot of games. That's where it's like if he's healthy at the deadline and he can help a team that's looking for scoring, you move him and you try and get some picks to start taking more bites of the apple, try and get in the lottery. Yeah. There's new tanking rules, and you try and rebuild from there. But the Giannis Antetokounmpo era is officially over. How will Gary Ellerson remember the Giannis Antetokounmpo era?
It was successful. But because what pick was he?
He was the 15th pick in the 2013 NBA draft.
Right, and you had him with Jabari Parker, and Jabari, we know the history there, and they had to flip that, and Giannis had to be the guy, and it worked out for him. And you got a championship that you haven't had here in 50 years. I thought it was great. Did you want another one? Yeah. But what he did for Milwaukee was absolutely incredible. And let's talk about the work off the court that he did within his community will be missed.
No doubt. No matter how people are feeling, I think there'll be a lot of Bucks fans that might be frustrated. But when you look back at the total body of work of what Giannis did from the time he was brought to Milwaukee from overseas and embraced the city, his kids' passports say Milwaukee, his father's buried in Milwaukee, he will always love Milwaukee. It just is a different era for him to chase a second championship, and the Bucks currently do not have the best chance for him to do so. So all good things come to an end. And like you said, we've seen a lot of successful stars leave the state of Wisconsin. Divorces are normal when you're a star in any professional sport.
Yeah.
It's very rare that you start someplace and end the same place. There are examples, but they become more rare by the day. We continue on from Summerfest. It's the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour with Ben Brust in for Homer. Next. Two important questions to be answered by Gary Ellerson here on the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. No Homer. He was on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy this morning. I'm Ben Brust in for Homer live at Summerfest in the Gruber Law Office Sports Zone. Gary Ellerson, I'm going to ask you this. You have Christian Watson, Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, and Matthew Golden. Give me a rough yardage, and who, 1 through 4, will be top to bottom in receiving yards?
Well, yes, I think that group of guys, Christian Watson is a straw that stirs his drink. He makes it go. Because he's the deep threat. Everybody else works off of him. Although is a deep threat as well, remains to be seen. But Tucker Kraft is off. And that's going to help him underneath while maybe Golden or Watson take the double teams over the top. You want yardage?
I mean, what's interesting here, well, the one thing that I know you didn't dive deep into it, but when Jaden Reed was healthy the first two seasons, he did lead them in receptions and receiving yards. So it'll be interesting how all these four play together, because they didn't play together at all four of them, because of injuries throughout the season for the entire team, and specifically that wide receiver room. Now, I guess I think you laid out the wide receiver.
If you're a defensive coordinator and you come in to play the Packers and you look at Reed, Kraft, Watson, who are you moving the coverage to?
It's a great question. I feel like the way Tucker Kraft was playing, I feel like the attention should be on him, but the way that Christian Watson can be, those 10 games that he came back from the ACL, he wasn't just that deep threat. He was an intermediate guy, a short route guy, and of course he is your deep threat guy as well. He put on 10 complete games as a wide receiver. If you can get that from him for an entire season, he's the guy that you make sure that you slow down. But then Tucker Kraft, I mean, he's got to be next.
Yeah, Watson is explosive no matter where you get him the ball. So you got to double what I'm saying. And Jaden Reed, Tucker Kraft can work off of that. And it remains to be seen what Matthew Golden can give you. I'm not sure yet.
I'm not sure yet either, but I can tell you what. I know it was only one play, but to see what he was able to do catching the ball right at the line of scrimmage and taking it to the house in a playoff game in the fourth quarter, that should get you excited. Now, seeing it consistently over the course of a regular season is obviously important, but it's hard not to get excited when you see someone do something like that, making people miss, juke cuts, jump cuts, getting to the end zone from 30 yards out, catching at the line of scrimmage. That is some special stuff that you see from a first-round pick and get excited about what he can do. Now he's just got to prove it.
Yeah, right. He's got to get an opportunity. for whatever reason, they didn't give him the opportunity last year to make big
plays.
Well,
when you move on from Romeo Doubs and Dontavian Wicks, I think it's implied now that you have these four and you're going to make sure
absolutely.
That all four are getting their fair share. Now, do you believe that Tucker Kraft will reset the market here and get signed by the Green Bay Packers and be the highest paid tight end in the NFL?
What did the kid at Atlanta get?
Pitts, if I'm not mistaken, was around. Was he past Trey McBride? Did he set it, C-Cap?
That's C-Cap. Because I think that's the going rate.
He ain't paying attention.
Right now.
One more time, Ben. What was that?
3-year, $54 million, which was $36 million guaranteed. So about $18 million for Kyle Pitts. I mean, he's going to be higher than that. I think he's going to surpass and reset the market around $22 million per year. And obviously what's interesting is Homer preaches, and I know I'm sure he preaches to you, the only thing he cared about with Christian Watson was the guaranteed money. And so it'll be interesting to see what the guaranteed money for Tucker Kraft will be.
So I say 3 years, 60, and the guaranteed money is going to be where it's at.
3 years, 60.
Because if you look at the Christian Watson money, I think he gets all that money. The contract was a four-year deal. He's going to play for 4 years. And I think Tucker Kraft gets a 3-year 60, but it depends on what they give him as a signing bonus. I'm not sure.
Well, you have Trey McBride right now as a 4-year $76 million contract and a $43 million in guaranteed money, which
that's
obviously
money.
He was an all-pro last year. I think Tucker Kraft was playing at an all-pro level. And the cap went up, so we'll see what his contract looks like if they do ink him before the season. Or if they do it in the season, but I know Tucker Kraft should be a part of this Green Bay Packers future with how he has played. And just unlucky that Sean Ryan fell on him and tore that ACL.
No, that's crazy, right? So Benny, are we going to talk some Badger basketball?
If you want to do that, we will wrap up the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour talking. You know what? Whatever Gary Ellerson wants is happening next. Wrapping up the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour live from Summerfest. No Homer, I'm Ben Brust. As promised, I said, Gary Ellerson, it's your hour. Whatever you want, you bring it.
Well, it's going to be a hot year.
You cut out for a second, Gary. Hit me again.
Yeah, I know. I cut out. Can you hear me now?
I got you.
I really like what the Badgers basketball team is doing with the recruits. They've just got on board.
So I love what they're doing from the recruiting standpoint as well. They got an in-state guy who's a top five player in the state. You know, a lot of people talk about that when it comes to guard. They got a couple of Minnesota kids, which seems to be a good pipeline for them. Now, obviously, a lot of teams are built in the transfer portal, so we'll see what they look like as well from the guys they brought in this coming year. But let me know if this is fair or unfair. I think that Matt LaFleur and Greg Gard, obviously, this is only Matt LaFleur under the Jordan Love era. Because it's been 7-seed, 7-seed, 7-seed. And for guard, it hasn't been the second weekend of the tournament since 2017. So I know that I'm going to get excited and they're going to do well in the regular season. And they're going to win some games and it's going to be exciting. But they both need to break through when it matters most. Is that fair?
That's pretty good. You're getting pretty good at this thing, Benny.
Like I said, I'm dumb brain, just trying to get better every day.
What is it? I don't think it's the same because I think it's different. College should be more pressure on Matt LaFleur doing better. in the playoffs.
Yeah, the reason why I like it is because of the similarity of the one-and-done nature of the postseason, right? You have the NCAA tournament, it's one-and-done. The NFL is one-and-done as well in baseball and in the NBA. Typically, in these longer series, you get the best opponent that wins over, you know, the series. So that's where I kind of landed for both of those guys, and specifically LaFleur and Love in this Love era, because he's 1-3. And again, we can always take into account that in that last game, he threw for 300-plus yards and had four touchdowns, but he was also the quarterback of a team that didn't get a first down in the third quarter and lost the same way that they lost to the Bears in the second game they played them.
Well, listen, Matt LaFleur needs to do better. We know that. But I'm impressed with what Greg Gard has been able to do in the new NIL era. That's hard to do at Wisconsin.
Yeah, people are really down on him, though, despite the fact that he's done well in the transfer portal and finding ways to be competitive. People continue to say that, well, he hasn't been to the second weekend since 2017. So you're not of that camp getting frustrated that they're not finding that Sweet 16 success despite him doing well in the transfer portal and making this team competitive each year?
Do I want him to do that? Yes. That's how tough it is.
Put because that player
if you're going
back
against,
on.
I mean, yeah, look at the players that other teams have recruit from that we're not getting.
You know,
it's still about.
I'm glad you brought that up,
Jimmy's
there,
and
you know
the Joes.
Because Michigan lost their sixth man and still had a sixth and seventh man that were, if somebody got in foul trouble, they didn't miss a beat. That's why they won the national championship, because they had six, seven guys that were paid a crap ton of money, and they won.
Yes.
So what has he been able to do? He beat Michigan. They beat Illinois twice. They beat a lot of – they beat Purdue. They beat teams that were better than them, which got you excited this year that they could do something different, and it didn't happen. But I think if you can continue to drive recruits, win in the transfer portal, and you break through, get to the Sweet 16 – you can start a trickle effect of people are starting to understand this is what they're about. Now, the biggest thing is regular season for Matt LaFleur and Greg Gard, to me, do not matter as much. I want to see what both of them do when it comes down to that one and done. And not one and done going to the NBA, but one and done in the stressful situations of the NCAA tournament and the playoffs.
And how many of those do you have, Benny, on your team? You talk about depth when you're going playing tournaments like that. Some guys get cold and you have no replacement for them. You talk about Michigan, they did. If you look at, I just think Greg Gard, the basketball program, they understand it. The football program is a whole different deal. They don't understand it. They don't get it. And they have to now buy the right players.
And they got a weak schedule. So it's time to put up or shut up for football. Like recruiting has been better there too, but you're paying somebody $8 million not to win four games. I'm sorry. That's just the fact.
Yeah,
of the matter.
Agreed, buddy. Absolutely.
That $8 million sounds pretty good right now, doesn't it, Gary?
It sure does. I split
Gary
it with
you. I would too. A handshake deal. I would too. It's been a pleasure hanging out with you, Gary.
All right, buddy.
You enjoy the weekend.
I will. You too.
That is it.
Everybody.
For... What's up?
Good night, everybody.
That has been it for the Gary Ellerson Homer Hour. Ben Bruss filling in for Homer. That was Gary. You can listen back on YouTube or the ESPN Wisconsin app. C-Cap, time for you to send us out.
Oh, it was me? That was Gary, and that was Ben, and that was the Homer Hour.
Nice job.